Hello, and welcome to Media Ministry at Holden Village. Today's date is June 25th, 2004. Today's session number is ERD 2004-05. Today's speaker is Dan Erlander. Today's lesson is St. Francis of Assisi. Francis, summoned out to his cross. Let's listen in.
This is the fifth session on St. Francis, and we are ready to start. And before we go on with the story of Francis, and I filled it in now all the way up to his death. And if you weren't here last time, we went with Francis to Egypt, where he attempted to stop the Fifth Crusade and failed. But this wonderful story of his friendship and relationship with the Muslim Caliph, I mean Sultan, not Caliph, Sultan. And then coming back, the first martyrs, Franciscan martyrs, they were martyred not so much for their faithfulness, but for lacking public relations skill with Muslim people. Is that one way to say it? And so then now Francis, and that's what we'll start, when he returns now to the Franciscan order, and they're coming together to Assisi for their meeting, and by now there are thousands of Franciscans all over Italy, France, Germany, and up into Scandinavia. And then they all come together every 2 years for called the Pentecost Chapter Meeting in a field near Assisi, where they're totally disorganized. But part of the organization now, we need to know a little about what is called the Third Order of Franciscans. And the First Order of Franciscans are the brothers, or what Francis originally called the friars minor, meaning the little friars or the insignificant friars. And then the Second Order are, now I forgot their official name at the beginning, but today they're called the Clares, or the Poor Clares, and these are the women that followed Francis's dear friend, who today we know as St. Clair, on the little icon here. And then the third order of Franciscans, that Francis, the one way we know that the Franciscan movement wasn't what we usually often call a cult, was that anyone was welcome to join and anyone was welcome to leave. There was no psychological mind bending or molding. If one came and joined the fellowship, then Francis would take very seriously the vows that they had made. But if they were not able to keep this vow, they were free to leave the order and find another way of service. Then there were many lay people and people in families and people who had jobs and land but were deeply, deeply moved by the preaching of Francis of repentance, simplicity, care for the poor, and peacemaking. And what Francis did in response to them was form the Third Order, and these were people who had normal lives, but then they made a simple vow, and the vow for them was to live simply, practice nonviolent peacemaking, and prayers. And I think those were the three. And so then they formed themselves as support communities to the Clares and to the Friars. And the Third Order exists to this day of families and married people and people in normal life who support the Franciscan movement. This is probably what saved the Pentecost chapter out in the field with 2,000 to 3,000 disorganized monks. They probably brought the food and got the kitchen organized and got the portable toilets set up and everything for these great Pentecost meetings. So now, as I mentioned, when Francis returns from Egypt and also he receives permission to visit the holy sites in Jerusalem and Bethlehem, and then returns to Italy, and we even know what port he lands in, Venice. I like to go there someday, Venice, and then back to Assisi. And now returning to the order, he finds out, and he received word before he got on the boat, but he finds out that the order of monks is in dispute and dissension, and the main argument is the original vision and dream of Francis has been considered by the majority of brothers to be too hard and too harsh. And they want certain things that will make it more comfortable, including things like the permission to go to school. Francis was so committed to equality and felt that education would raise somebody to a higher level than everyone else. They also wanted to be able to own books. You know, and the vision of St. Francis was a people that would follow Jesus, who had nothing, by having absolutely nothing. And if you weren't here before, this was based on Francis' reading of Matthew 10. So if you want to look that up tonight or something, Matthew 10, Jesus' instruction to his disciples, Francis' dream of his life was to live that literally and also gather together all those who will join him in living that literally. So now you have the dissension between Francis and the earliest monks who shared his vision and the newer monks who wanted things just a little more comfortable. And part of that was to be like an order like the Dominicans or the Benedictines, who had buildings, dormitories, dining rooms, and fields and wealth. And that, from the very, very beginning, Francis' dream is a people who own nothing. So returning, he discovers and finds and enters into this revolt. The Pope has appointed a Cardinal Hugolin to be the protector of the San Francisco, protector of the Franciscans. And to be like Jesus, Francis never wanted any papers of protection, because Jesus had no papers to protect him. And what happened in this dispute was that Francis was dismissed as the leader of the Franciscan movement. And one who shared his vision was appointed to take his place. And that was Peter Cantania, one of the brothers who had been with him since the beginning, who unfortunately died very shortly after that. And then the one who has been manipulating his way up to power is Elias, and whom one writer has called, or one early writer called, the least Franciscan of all Franciscans, Brother Elias. He was interested in power, control, ambition, hierarchy, and he was an eloquent speaker and was very, very charming. Now, Francis, now out of the leadership, is asked now to rework the rule of the order, And remember, the first rule was originally presented to Leo III, and was approved. But now this is not okay for the Franciscans anymore, but they do appoint Francis to write a new order. So he writes a new order that is dismissed, and then he's asked to write another new order, and these are the guidelines on how the monks will live. And the second revision, it's very, very close to, if you're a school teacher, when a student, or maybe some of you did this, you come back without your homework and say, the dog ate it. Elliot says, I'm just so sorry I lost it. I don't know where. I knew I put it in some pile, but I don't know where it is. So that was lost. And then there comes a third order, which by this time there's a new pope, Gregory the Ninth, and this becomes the rule of, the one that was dismissed before this one was a rule of 1221. That's the one that Elias misplaced. And then in 1223, a new rule that's approved by the pope. And what's positive about it, that in this controversy, Cardinal Hugoulin did not try to crush the zealots. And the zealots in the Franciscan movement were Francis and the original early brothers that shared his vision. And also, with the coming of this new rule, Elias was fired for I just call it, he was snooty. So he was fired, and the charge was destroying the Franciscan spirit. Now, this is the interesting...
Who laid the charge?
What's that?
Who laid the charge? Was that the protector?
I'm always guessing. I would guess it would have been the papal protector. It was kind of the, like if you had a high school club, you have one of the teachers is the sponsor. If you've been here all the days, I do a lot of guessing. But this is very interesting, the difference between Francis' order and the new rule. It's one half the length. Instead of having 100 verses from the Gospels, it has 10. And everything about prayer and emotions and feelings disappears. No longer is the word truly poor used. And the monks now will be allowed to have books, becomes more lenient on poverty, and then it sets up the Franciscans to be equal in advantages with the other orders like Dominicans and Benedictines, and abandons the necessity of manual labor. So do you get a sense how the vision in some ways, yeah.
So I got the impression that Francis still wrote this last document or not.
Yeah, and that's how I understand it too. And
so
it must
succumbed to, in a way, he succumbed to the...
Yeah, one thing I have to reread and check on if someone else wrote the final, or if that also was Francis. But either way, he was under a lot of pressure. And so thank you, and that'll be my. And if you want an answer to that, I don't have an email, but you can call me. I'll put my phone up. I'm serious. I have people call sometimes and just ask. Because those are things I want to find out, you know, when people ask. So the important thing is, in many ways, this Franciscan spirit has always remained. I mean, it's been Franciscans that have gone to the far corners of the world and have lived in poverty, and in very, very dedicated service through the centuries. So, okay, now the response of Francis to this disruption of the order and this new world was to become very tired, discouraged, sick, and then by this time he was going blind. He can't go out in the sunshine without his eyes being covered. And he then withdraws from one hermitage, kind of a hiding cave place for prayer, to another. And he becomes impatient, and he then weeps for the impatience that he's shown to other brothers, moody, and asks forgiveness over and over for his moodiness with the other brothers. And he feels abandoned, and doubts arise, and the question comes up, was I all wrong? Was my dream wrong from the very beginning? And goes into what the saints have called the dark night of the soul. And along with that, his health is getting worse, weakness, disease, some say some form of cancer, possibly leprosy from all of his caring for lepers, and from his fasting and his mortification of his body, which in the very end he deeply regretted for not taking care of what he called Brother Ass, which was his own body. But the greatest suffering, the greatest suffering was the loss of his order. Because when he had lost everything else, he had lost his dream of becoming a knight. He had lost his dream of converting Muslims to Christ. He had lost his dream of being a martyr. Basically, he went to the Sultan and couldn't find anybody to martyr him. And he had lost his dream of bringing peace and stopping the Fifth Crusade. And then when that loss came, he had one thing left that was his, and that was his order of brothers. And now he has lost this. Now Francis felt abandoned by God, body in excruciating pain, and in December of 1223, now goes to a special hermitage, which means a cave or a hut or a hiding place, and there to pray and be alone. And while he is alone at Greccio, Christmas is coming. It's December. And he gets an idea. He goes to a nobleman in the little town that's near the hermitage, makes arrangements with him so that it is announced in the town that the Christmas Eve Mass will be said up on the side of the hill. And when they go up that evening to the side of the hill where Francis is, they see something they have never seen before. And that is, today we call them living manger scenes. People had seen creches, you know, little creches in their churches, but never. He found a couple in the town that had a newborn baby. And then there, they sat and then in a manger placed their baby. And then Francis brought animals, and the animals stood around them. And then some of the people in the town dressed as the shepherds and the wise men. And this was a service of the word for the Mass. And Francis preached. And the reports were that he went long in his preaching that night because he went into ecstasy. And the ecstasy was that every time he said the word Jesus, he loved Jesus so much he never wanted to leave the word Jesus. Can you hear? And the animals turning. And why the adoration? And the reason for this is that the mercy and tenderness of God, the condensation of God to lower God's self, to come to humanity, not in power or wealth or human strength, but in the form of a helpless baby. God came to be nothing. Emmanuel, God with us. And that's what he preached about. And that's the beautiful story in which he rejoiced. And the Eucharist that night, he brought a priest. Francis was never ordained. Brought a priest to celebrate the Eucharist. And it was like the first Christmas of God coming in the simple and God coming in the ordinary. Then the desire of Francis is, he knows he's close to death, and that is to go to the mountain of the Franciscans that is north, La Verna, Mount La Verna. I did read that it was 4,500 feet above sea level, which nobody's asking, but I... 4,500. There on that mountain, he goes with four of his closest brothers, and they stay away from him so he can be alone, but just to bring food and water to him every day. And there he really goes into what would be known as mystical prayer, into another world of prayer by himself. And in this mystical experience, he sees the pain of Jesus dying on the cross. He has a vision of a crucified angel before him. And then the true joy returns, because Francis realizes that by losing everything, he has joined Christ in his crucifixion. And by joining Christ in his crucifixion, he cries out the words of the Apostle Paul, "I have been crucified with Christ. It is no longer I who live, but it is Christ that lives within me." Now this is the point at which the very controversial legend and all of the argument of whether it really happened or not was when Francis received the stigmata, meaning the wounds of Christ on his hands and his feet and his side. And this is really something to read about. You know, those who say yes and others, there's a lot of research that has been done, but whether it actually happened or not, those have said that by this time Francis had so many blotches, bleaches, sores, and infections that whether it happened or not, there were the wounds of Christ. Are most of you familiar with that, the legend of the stigmata? And very often when you see a picture of Francis, this one has it, but it's cut off, you'll see the wounds of Christ in his hands and his feet. This centuries later, it is so close to what Luther called the theology of the cross. That the power of God is not in success, having things, owning something, controlling something, being in charge, But the power in this world, the power of the cross, is in our weakness and in our nothingness. There God works. And as Paul says, the cross is foolishness to those who are perishing, but to us who are being saved, it is the power of God. In 1224 in the spring, the brothers knew that Francis was about to die, and they moved him now to a place where it all began, San Damiano, the church where he first saw the cross. And there in his weakness, he said to his brothers, "I want to sing a new song. I want to sing a new song." And Francis began to sing. He poured out a song in the Umbrian dialect, which was on its way to becoming Italian. Italian language was not shaped yet, but in his dialect, he sang this song, and can you imagine the surprise of his brothers as this elegant, beautiful song comes out of the mouth of this dying man? And if those who have been with us the whole week know that in some ways this is no surprise, this is what Francis did when he was king of the parties. He was the entertainer, he was a singer, he was the writer of songs, he was a player of the lyre. It's just coming out now in a new song. And it's a song of creation. And first he sang four stanzas of his poem, revealed his poem to his brothers, the first four stanzas. About mother, brother, son, and sister moon, and all creation. And so we have it in the Lutheran Book of Worship as the beautiful all creatures of our God and King. And it's at this point now in his life that he first sang this song. We have the original words, but we do not have the music preserved. So this is a paraphrase. It's quite different and has the same kind of story or call as the original. But, so let's join Francis in singing.
Oh,
voice was excruciating. And there was a doctor in Siena that had a new treatment for what he thought was this eye disease. And his treatment was to get a burning, a red hot iron, and then by pushing that red hot iron into the side, that it would open a wound that would pull the infection out of the eyes. And Francis agreed to this treatment, which at that time would have been the most advanced medical skills, and went to Siena for the treatment. And when the red iron came towards him, he cried his prayer that was part of his song. Now, Brother Fire, dear Brother Fire, be kind to me. The treatment did not work. In fact, his eyes were worse. And he also, he also became weaker and weaker and weaker now, and death was imminent. He was moved to the bishop's palace in Assisi, so he could have the best of care and quietness and retreat. But at this time, remember way back early in Francis' life, way back early, he went to war when the city of Assisi was fighting Perugia, and now it's happening again. But this time, a war is building up between the armies of the mayor of Assisi and the armies of the bishop of Assisi. And they were hating each other. They were in severe conflict, and there seemed to be no resolution. And Francis, by this time, had moral power because of his life and his witness. He asked the bishop and the mayor to meet with him in the bishop's palace, and they came. It was, where they met was in the courtyard, and it was filled with people. And they honored the request of Francis, and this is how it happened. He pleaded with them to forgive one another, and the mayor and bishop honored his request by forgiving each other and then sitting down and forming a peace agreement that both of them could agree to. And then a surprise came, that everybody saw Francis there on his pallet that had been brought out to the courtyard, and he was ready to sing again. And in his weakness, he sang a song about peacemakers.
Pain and sorrow bear, pray.
song that they both wept loudly, and then threw their arms around each other and embraced each other in their common weeping. Now, during these days, all Francis could do was sing his song. And when he was too weak to sing, he'd have the brother sing it back to him. Then he'd sing it again. And the brothers probably said, there he goes again, singing his song and singing his song. And then when Francis knew that death was very near, he reached out to Sister Death and sang a song to her. To go back to St. Mary's, where he lived those years in the beginning. And so they carry him there. And when he gets there, he's taken to the small hut where he slept. And he asked that all of his clothes be taken off and that he be placed on Mother Earth. And so they do this. And he's there on Mother Earth with absolutely nothing, except now he is embraced by his two ladies, Sister Poverty and Mother Earth. Sister Poverty and Mother Earth. They take him back up to the bed, and there, at age 45, on the night between October 3 and October 4, 1226, Francis dies, and as he dies, he mutters the words of Psalm 41. And his brothers are around there weeping. And then all of the funeral preparations are ready because his sister, friend in Rome, came all the way from Rome to do all of the preparing. They lift his body and they take the body to San Damiano, which is the headquarters of the Poor Clares. And they take his body in so Claire can see him one more time. And there she weeps and touches him and gives thanks. And then the procession to Assisi, heavily guarded. And to know that, to know the medieval customs was to know why, yes. Heavily guarded, because if someone could get a finger or even a toenail, that would be extremely valuable throughout the European church. So it's carefully guarded. And then from the church in Assisi, he is buried. And then immediately, Elias steps forward with the plans for the magnificent cathedral-like church that will be over the bones and the body. of the one who not wanted absolutely nothing. Then, with the song, Francis had written a doxology, very likely to go between every verse of his song. By the way, this song was a milestone in both music in Italy and also in the development of the modern Italian language. But they sang this doxology. So we'll stand and sing the doxology, and then we're going to release you, and then sit down again, we're going to talk. Connects to the time
A little bit about modern day Franciscans and how they live out his vision, where they expanded it and changed it?
Well, they basically still follow the order that was approved at the same time Francis lost his position. That was a watering down, but it is yet the spirit of Francis, as I understood it from Franciscans, never leaves. There's always this call, back to the simplicity, and Franciscans still own nothing but books. And missionaries, caregivers, all over the world. And it was just 150 years after his death that the Franciscans reached China, established the first churches in China.
Thank you. So then is there still the third order?
Uh-huh, yeah.
Okay. So they're the ones that provide sustenance of community.
Yeah, and sometimes I like to think as the spirit of Holden Village, as a Third Order Franciscan Retreat Center. I think Holden's vision of peace and simplicity, prayer, worship, we can declare ourselves sometimes and always hope the vision stays of simplicity and peace and prayer and but it always will remain that Francis will, his spirit will always be alive in this place. So we can call ourselves, in a way, humbly, Lutheran and other denominations and all the people that gather in Holden as part of the Third Order of Franciscans.
Is the reason we have these words because those who loved him recorded it right away?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they recorded them immediately. Okay. And you wish they would have had some way to write down the music. And if you want, you can look at it afterwards if you want to see how the most literal translation from the Italian looks. It's the same spirit as the one we sang, but it's also fairly, it's different too.
Dan, is the Franciscans who came to the American Indians Marquette, Joliet, Hennepin, up the Mississippi and into the Great Lakes area. Were they Franciscans then?
If I remember right, that someone could help me, that was it more the Jesuits?
Yeah.
Remember the movie, the Franciscans came up from Mexico, California, Arizona, New Mexico. And we, when we lived in New Mexico, I mean, New Mexico is Francis territory. All the churches that are named Francis and all the statues of Francis and the poverty of the first Spanish people in New Mexico, they saw their brotherhood in the story of Francis. And the other side, one of the most bizarre things is to go to downtown San Francisco, and the most elegant hotel is the St. Francis Hotel. You know that?
Then a couple of years ago, I was in Santa Fe for a conference, and I was really struck by statues of St. Francis everywhere. Mm-hmm. And the full name of Santa Fe is the City of the Holy Faith of St. Francis of Assisi, abbreviated to Holy Faith.
He lives in that land. Yes, and that book I had the other day, about the time of the anniversary, they call it exhumed, and so I have a picture of his bones. So I think the reason they know he was 5'3" by the analysis of his bones.
They reburying them?
Was he all there?
He was never all there. Sometimes he's called, one of the terms for St. Francis is God's fool. You know, that's in the upside down Christian faith, that is a term of endearment. And,
did they actually build a cathedral? After he died, the proclamation that there was going to be a cathedral built there.
Yeah.
They did actually build it.
Yeah, and it's by saying cathedral, I mean a very large church building, because there is a cathedral church of the bishop in Assisi. But who's been? I know some have been to Assisi. Was the church over the tomb?
The little one is inside.
The little hut
inside the church.
Is inside.
And that's his burial place?
Yeah, in that church in Assisi, that is his burial place. Am I right? Those who have been. Ellen, is that where he is?
Yeah, the little inside the little house inside the church.
Inside the church is this little house.
I wasn't able to attend all of the sessions, but where does the connection come with the animals and the blessing of the animals and the story of St. Francis and the wolf?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Did you already cover that in the session?
Yeah, it comes through at the end of his life when he wrote his song. You know,
okay.
It was humans joining all creation and all the animals in praise to God.
But didn't he have a relationship with animals also?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I'll just... And what he saw every part of creation is connected, and he got this from his early dreaming about being a knight in a knightly court. And that's what he wanted to be. He wanted to be a knight, like in King Arthur type court. And the medieval court had a word called cortesia, which the closest English translation is courtesy. But every part of the knightly court, they honored one another and related to each other in cortesia. And then now, in his mission, he has fulfilled his dream of being a knight in a medieval court, but the medieval court is the entire universe. And now he has this vision that every part of that universe, like King Arthur's court, every part of the universe relates to every other part in the Proconesia. Then the other connection was that all of the animals own nothing. And the animal, therefore, was the model for the following of Jesus, because to follow Jesus to Francis was to own nothing, and that puts you in complete harmony with all of the animals and all of the... And on top of that, it's obvious he had a unique way of speaking to animals and related, that we still know today when we watch Animal Planet. Does that answer the question?
Are St. Mary's and St. Gallen still there?
Yeah, yes. And tourists to Assisi, I don't know how, they're both still there, San Damiano and St. Mary's. And Karen and I are going in October, so I'm a future day hold, and I'll bring you a report.
Slides.
So what about today? How does Francis continue to speak to us? Or is he totally unrealistic? No one can follow this.
Oh, he's so appropriate, because not only is the voice being heard, but his voice isn't being heard in so many ways. Mm-hmm. And that same conflict that he struggled so hard to break away from is still sadly, such a difficult thing. I know I have little children, and saving the world for our children, that's, it's just, I don't mean to depress. Leave a depressing note,
but
it's sad. It still exists, that struggle.
Yeah.
We haven't embraced
it.
I haven't embraced
that.
We as a society. We're trying.
I mean, Francis came to America to preach. You know, this is a guess, but the life in Assisi and Italy at that time, there were so many similarities. You know, there was the, they were the people that were well off, they were the forgotten poor, they're exploited, and our first lesson was how at the time of the rise of the city-state like Assisi, the poor people lost all of their health benefits and all of their safety nets, which before had been provided by the feudal system.
Yeah, I think even more so, like, I just wonder, the population at that time, what it was, what the breaking point of the resources of the earth, that's mm-hmm. one thing, there will be a no return point for population and resource abuse. Yeah. And I know his conditions were terrible, but the population was nowhere near what it is now.
No, I'm sure it wasn't. So, yeah. There is... I'm sure there was enough food for everyone, but it was the way it was managed. Well, now I hadn't planned some dramatic way to close. I have not read any prayers of Francis, and of course we all know the most common one, Lord, make me an instrument of your peace, which I mentioned the first time was not written until right after the First World War, and it was written not to be a prayer of St. Francis, but as an appeal that never again there be a war like World War I. And then one Catholic journal connected it to St. Francis, and then it just took off as the prayer of St. Francis. So I'd like to close reading that prayer, and then if I can find this. Find this other prayer. which I cannot find. So I will just pray the later prayer that certainly is in the form. I found it. So I'll close with that one. And but this, and if you you know, read it along with me, we almost have it memorized. So I will say this, a prayer. Loving Jesus, the one who loved you so dearly and desired all of his life to be like you, to make peace, to forgive, to proclaim the gospel of your reign, we give thanks for Francis. We give thanks for Claire and their followers and all the love that they have brought to this world over the centuries. And now we pray the prayer in their memory. Lord, make me an instrument of your peace. Where there is hatred, let me sow love. Where there is discord, harmony. Where there is injury, pardon. Where there is error, truth. Where there is doubt, faith. Where there is despair, hope. Where there is darkness, light. Where there is sadness, joy. O Divine Master, grant that I may not so much seek to be consoled as to console, to be understood as to understand, to be loved as to love. For it is in giving that we receive, it is in forgetting self that we find ourselves, it is in pardoning that we are pardoned, and it is in dying that we are born to eternal life. And this prayer of Francis, may the power of your love, O Lord, fiery and sweet as honey, wean my heart from all that is under heaven, so that I may die for love of your love, you who were so good as to die for love of my love. Amen.
Amen.
Do you get it? But the, should I say it again?
Yes.
Yeah, the prayer is that may I die for loving you so much, so I will receive your love. You who are so good to die, that you ate so much to receive my love. Does that make sense? So, yeah. So thank you for sharing.